To all the linear thinkers that are tuning in today to listen to this incredible conversation, I feel like I need to tell you in advance that this is a conversation between two global creative thinkers, both diagnosed with ADHD. I loved every minute of it, but today's conversation takes some jumps, some leaps. We laugh a lot, we jump a lot. Today's conversation is with Calgary artist Shannon Smith. So get ready for this. Today, Shannon and I discuss in one episode how photography was the outlet for Shannon's postpartum depression, how art is going to save our world, and how as artists, we live in the gray zone. We're inquisitive, we're curious, and why this is exactly what the world needs more of. How parenting patterns run deep and stopping toxic parenting cycles can sometimes feel a lot like standing on the edge of the cliff, looking out into the abyss. How we feel alone when the system is not working for us, and how to show our kids that their interests matter and that home is a safe space for them to explore who they are. So a little bit about the incredible, lovely Shannon Smith. Shannon Smith, she, they, is a professional photographer and soul liberation coach based out of Calgary, Alberta. They have made it their life's work to empower and liberate their clients. Shannon believes that all human beings deserve to celebrate their unique beauty, feel validated and liberated from societal norms that no longer fit. As a photographer, they offer space for clients to celebrate their bodies in a way they've likely never experienced before. I have to tell you guys that I took a photo shoot with Shannon, and this is a detour. This is not part of Shannon's bio. That part of the safe space for their clients to simply be, like, it was an all-day photo shoot. I laughed. I cried. I sat on her couch in the middle of a photo shoot and cried because it was, by the way, it was nothing Shannon did. She put on this amazing playlist and the song came on and it was so emotional. It brought back so many memories and I just sat there on her couch and cried. And she does do that. She creates a safe space where you're like, I can be myself. Never mind, I only met her a few weeks ago. I'm just going to sit here and cry with this person I barely know, but I feel like I've known forever because she's one of those incredible people. Okay. As a coach, Shannon provides deeply personal support in a loving environment. Their goal is to lead clients in the journey to discover their authentic self and soul. Shannon is deeply passionate about social justice, intersectional feminism, and supporting the LGBTQ2IA+ community. Before we dive in, I do want to let you know that one characteristic of adult ADHD is a challenging time with time management. And these characteristics are broad and they can definitely apply to people without ADHD and they can definitely manifest differently with people with ADHD. But one thing that I tend to do is I tend to make these huge to-do lists, always have, and then I'm not able to do them. So that's a little bit what happened with Shannon and I. We wanted to talk about 123 different things. We discuss a lot in today's episode. But Shannon has agreed to come back for a second episode to talk about being a creative, a parent with ADHD. In 2 weeks, that episode airs, Shannon returns, and the two of us get very real and very honest and very open about how we have struggled and we have masked and how we are learning to live with ADHD. So let's jump into today's conversation with the incredible Shannon Smith. I'm so excited to talk to you. And in my mind, we're going to cover about 27 topics.
I mean, probably 101, let's be real, but it is so nice to be talking to you as well. I'm so excited.
And I think we can do it, but I also tend to really, really underestimate the time it takes to get through things. So I'm like, I want to talk to you about, obviously, your photography is phenomenal. Your art is phenomenal. Your soul liberation, body image work That is such a fascinating and difficult topic for me personally. I can't wait to dive into it. And parenting, because that's not enough. Parenting, the creative process, ADHD, breaking circuits, all the things. Can we do that in one podcast episode?
Yes, of course.
Okay. Of course. This is why I love Shannon. She's like, yes, we can. Let's do it. So thank you so much for being a part of Stories Within Us. I've just been looking forward to this, just to talk to you, really. Can you start off, Shannon, by telling us a little bit about yourself and your background? So growing up, were you always into art? I'm really curious about when the body image coaching came along. So yeah, just tell us everything you want to share.
So I grew up in Saskatchewan. So that is, I think, like a big root of who I am, right? Like small town, small atmosphere, chatting with everybody, you know, like, so that I think is a big root of who I am. I believe that fully. For my art, I have always been someone who's creative. My mom has always been a really crafty, creative person. So my memories with my mom are like baking and craft stuff my entire life. And the having that creative feel is always something that is been in my life, which I'm really thankful for, because I don't think everyone has always had that outlet. And then I've always been into photography. From the time that I remember being little, I always had like somebody's camera in my hand. And when I was 14, I was in photography class in high school. And it was a very dark time for me, a lot of trauma and stuff. And there was nothing more that I loved doing than being in photography class and being in the dark room and actually like doing like dark room work, like the chemicals and developing our actual photos and on prints. It was just so liberating. There was something about it even then that sparked it. And of course, I, as most creatives are, everybody told me, I was like, I love this. I want to do this as a job, thinking that I could be anything, right? And then the adults and grown-ups in my life were like, you can't do that. You're going to be a starving artist. Get a real job. So I never actually pursued it. And then went through my entire life doing jobs that I feel like I've always, like, you know, when you're walking like an oasis desert and you're like, this is the journey and I'm passing this thing and that thing. And then at the end, you get to this destination where it's like, ta-da, all those like journeys and all those little oasis and stops built it so that you could be at this place, right? And so I do believe that's what happened to me. I always wanted to be a psychologist when I knew I couldn't be, when I thought I couldn't be a photographer. And I had my own business as a massage therapist until I ruined my arms and worked in a very misogynistic business and did career counseling. I wasn't a career counselor, but I was in the office of that. And then I got pregnant and I spent most of the majority of my pregnancy on bed rest from 14 weeks on. And at the end of it, I had severe postpartum depression and I couldn't walk for about a year and a half still after he was born. And it just came a very, very dark place of my life. I couldn't see the world as mine, if that makes sense. It was a very dark tunnel, very, very, very secluded and lonely. And I was just really miserable. And I didn't have an outlet and I didn't have any of these things. And I started seeing a therapist and like, do you have any hobbies? And I was like, no, being a mom, like
survival. Survival is my current hobby.
Yeah. And I think that's like how most of us as moms are. And he was like, well, what have you always liked to do? And I was like, I like being creative. And I used to love photography. And he's like, well, do you have a camera? I was like, no, I'm going to get my husband to buy one. I went home and demanded, you're getting me a camera. And poor guy had no idea what hit him. And suddenly my world opened up. I could see the world through this device, through this different lens that wasn't my own. And even to this day, I don't remember many memories during that really hard time of postpartum depression. But I look back at my photos from that time of my son and our life, and I'm like, wow, okay, and now I remember it. I remember it. This gives me a new perspective. And it wasn't always dark. It wasn't always cloudy. There was this happening too. And so I'm really thankful that I was able to have that opportunity to tap into that different world and to see the world in a different way. And then the therapist said, well, I'm glad you're enjoying that. And I said, I am. I'm going to make a business out of it, I think. And he said, most people don't make hobbies their business. It's not usually successful. And I said, oh, in spite of you, I'm going to do it now. 7 years later. So for the body image aspect, having a child and being on bed rest for so long, my body changed a lot. I went from being very orthorexic and having an eating disorder and being addicted to going to the gym to now I couldn't do anything. My body wasn't able to do the same things. And I had a C-section. And so being somebody who's a plus size person, I knew where all my roles are. I knew where all those things were. And now I had a new role. and one that obviously, like whether you plan, have a birth story or all those things, it's still a traumatic experience. I had like another meltdown about that and like trying to learn my body. And I just realized like I had to break the cycle for my son, that this was miserable living in a world where I hated my body every day and I emotionally abused myself with my own words inside my own head. And then when I was doing photography for families, which is where I started, I heard moms speak so badly about themselves in front of their children. And I remember my mom doing that. I remember my mom ruining every photo that we ever were taking, whether it was professional or not. And I could see the pain in these mothers' eyes when I was taking their photos and I could see how they were uncomfortable. And I said, this has to change. I have to do more than just family photography. Anybody can do family photography. I need to do more. And then I jumped in and immersed myself in psychology about our bodies. And then that led me to feminism and social justice and all those wonderful things. But yeah, that was the start of my foundations and my real foundations of my business and what has led me to doing what I'm doing today.
That's such an incredible journey you shared with us. And thank you. There's so many, and we've talked about this before. So for those listening, I have done a photo shoot. Probably if you see pictures on social media or my website, those are all created by Shannon. and we talked about this before, but going back for a minute to the beginning, to your early childhood, and I love the metaphor of the oasis. Do you ever wonder if you had just said, I'm going to do it? You know, I'm a 14-year-old in the dark room. I love developing this. I know I have some ability, some talent. Maybe if you had is a dangerous question to ask, but can I preface this with something? Okay.
Yeah.
I had a remarkably similar situation as a young child. I was always writing. I was always creating. I was tearing pieces of paper up and gluing them back together. And then it was apparent that, you know, you can't make it writing and doing fine arts. And nevertheless, she persisted and I got my first degree in fine arts. But it was this constant drum, right? You need a job, you need health insurance, which living in the States, I really did need health insurance. And so I, you know, went into education for 16 years. And I guess possibly I do believe this. I think it's somewhat of a comfort, but I also believe if I had just started writing 19 years old out of high school and just buckled down and did it or started painting, I wouldn't have had that oasis journey that you talked about, that walk through the desert. And I like the desert because it was not a particularly comfortable experience. It often was lonely and hot and I was thirsty. I was creatively starved. But I often say I couldn't do this work now if I hadn't gone through that journey. So I was wondering kind of your thoughts, Shannon, on if you had gone back and told that 14-year-old girl, do it. So like, do you ever think about that? And do you ever think the outcome would have been different?
Yeah. I mean, I think about it all the time. And it's interesting because, I mean, if you look at my Instagram, I'm also quite the talker and writer. And I also, in like high school, was writing and I wanted to be an author too. I forgot that until you even started talking. I had like little novelettes and I had poems published and stuff too. So this combination of the photography and the art, if I would have done it at that time, I mean, yes, I probably still would have succeeded and I still would have enjoyed and maybe I would be further along I would have had 20 years to develop my skills instead of, you know, now 7, right? But at the same time, I wouldn't be as mature as I am now. And I probably wouldn't be led to doing exactly what I'm doing now and helping the people that I do. I'd probably be doing like fashion or, you know, something, not to say anything's wrong with that, but I probably would have went down a completely different journey. Sometimes when I used to think about it, I used to be really resentful of like, why did all the adults in my life discourage me from doing a passion? And why was capitalism so prevalent that they thought art wasn't needed? Yet art literally surrounds us every single day of our lives and people are making lots of money. So why was my art discounted to not being valuable? So I used to be really resentful, and not to say that that still doesn't exist, because sometimes I'm like, if I would have had more time, you know, like, but I really believe that our journeys, we're supposed to learn certain things. We're supposed to grow to the people that we are. And I certainly wouldn't be having the knowledge or the maturity to be with my clients and to relate to my clients. Like, I've been through all of these experiences in this life journey that I can relate to almost every client that comes in the door.
Yeah, well, it is interesting. I think it is an interesting reflective practice. I do agree. I think both, we can say our destinations would have been different. I feel you and I would not be sitting here talking about, I don't know where we would be and what we would be doing, but it is interesting. But having said that, and you are the one that introduced this term to me in this context, but you had talked to me about being a circuit breaker. Yeah. And this season is all about very much about our kids and how we can show up for them and be there for them, because that's kind of my focus in life right now. But one thing that I think I can say with confidence is that if one of our children should express an interest in the arts, I would hope, I already have it planned. I mean, I'm going to be like, okay, here's the deal. You need your own social media, like your private Instagram page, and there'll be no pictures of you, but your art we will put on there. And you need to start, let's hook you up with some mentors and let's start apprenticing. Like, I don't know what's going to happen if my kids are like, mom, I want to go into X, and it's like actually a feasible career, because I'm like totally, I'm just banking one of them will be like, I want to be a spoken word artist, or I want to be an experimental conceptual artist. I'm going to be like, fantastic. I've been waiting for this. I would hope that you and I, that would be part of our circuit breaking, right? Kind of rewriting the parenting role with our kids.
Yeah. I think that like we always want to give our children what we didn't have, right? And especially in our generation where we have so much education and we have so much access to information that our prior generations didn't have. You know, they couldn't just Google up something and how do I, you know, validate my child wanting to go in creative arts? Like, but we have that now and we have all this knowledge. And I think that if my kiddo decides that he wants to do something that in the arts or in something that I don't even know, right? Like right now he's into Minecraft and wants to build games. Like whatever it is, the world is our oyster. There's like, let's do it. Let's jump into it. I want them to feel surrounded by support and love and care and that their interests matter. And that I want my child to feel like home is a safe place to flourish and make mistakes and to dive into all the interesting things that you find that captivate you, because life is so full and there is so many things that can interest you. And why do we have to figure it out by the time we're 18? You know, like,
or 40 for that matter. No,
exactly. Right. So I feel like I just want to surround him with all of the support and all of the things that we didn't have, and not to live through him. Right. Like there's a difference of living through your children and putting that on them to, I want to see my child flourish with what excites them, you know?
Yeah.
Right. I know so many people in my other career that were like, I was like, why are you an accountant? Do you like numbers? Do you like to do it? They're like, no, I hate it. Why do you do this then? Right. And they're like, cause I had to get a job and I needed to make money. And I'm like, I don't want me or anybody to spend 8 to 10 hours a day hating what they do every day just because we think we have to make money. Do you know? Like, yeah, we have to survive. We have to do these things. But like, wouldn't it be so amazing to walk into work? And like, that's how I feel now, is to like go and do the things that you love and wake up with passion. I could contribute way more to life and to the world and my community when I actually love what I'm doing every day. and I feel good in my soul, and I want my child to feel that.
Yeah. That's beautiful. Well, I have a list. You know me. I showed you my multiple lists before we hit record. My daily calendar, my weekly, my monthly. But I have my 10-year long-term goals. And it's not in 10 years I will do this. It's over the next 10 years I would do this. But at the top is I will wake up with energy, excited to start the day.
Yeah.
Like not every day. Let's be real. But today, I was up at 4 this morning. I'm serious. Awesome. I was like writing my journals, making black beans and rice. Like I had the kitchen going. I was like, let's go.
Isn't that a good feeling to have?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like since the school year has started, I've been getting up before my alarm clock because I'm like, oh, I'm going to journal. I'm going to write. Yeah.
Yeah. Can you imagine if every single person in the world woke up like that every single day? Like, I know that's a big lofty goal, but like, can you just imagine how much peaceful and happy every single person would be in the world if we actually woke up and were excited about whatever we had to do?
I was like, we wouldn't have wars.
No, like that's exactly it. And we have like full capable people.
Okay, to all the linear thinkers that are listening to this conversation, I apologize. You can click off at any time.
This is an ADHD conversation.
We are just, the dots are connecting in my head. Okay. I love this. But I was like, yes, no wars. I thought of the John Lennon song.
Yeah.
Right? No wars, no religion. Yeah. Imagine living in harmony. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Asking about circuit breaking though. I don't think I actually answered your question.
Okay, well let's go into circuit breakers. Is it circuit breaking or being circuit breakers? Can we use
circuit
both?
Circuit breaking, cycle breaking, whatever you want to call it.
Okay, we can use it both the noun and the
action. Why not? The verb.
The verb. During my photo shoot with you, which was amazing, we spoke a bit about parenting and how we are. Well, I say we're breaking new ground with parenting in many ways. That's a good parenting day. There are some parenting days I feel like I'm on a cliff looking into the abyss, going like, yes, I need instructions. Like, give me some direction, someone. Because what we're doing, and we were talking specifically within the context of gender identity, but I think we could do it in regards to kind of breaking that capitalist mindset. There's so many ways we could apply it. Letting our kids express emotion. I think we talked about that too, like letting them have meltdowns and letting them be sad or angry. So you use the term circuit breakers, and I love the term because it explains kind of what I'm trying to do, but also why it's so difficult to do because, oh my gosh, patterns are ingrained and patterns are powerful. And I mean, our brain is actually wired with patterns. There's so much we do and we don't even consciously realize we're doing it because it's just wired in us. So difficult. Could you delve a bit into what the term means, Shannon, and how you are a circuit breaker with your work, because you are, and other aspects of your life that you feel comfortable with sharing?
Yeah. So to me, like cycle breaking or circuit breaking, whatever you want to call it, so many different ways, I'm sure, is really stopping those patterns and gaining new tools and gaining new knowledge to stop the harmful patterns that are happening and to start new ones, things that actually work for us. They run deep and they do. We've had thousands of years of different types of societies and tribes and communities and world operations and systems. And we kind of have fallen into this place where we are now with the end of capitalism and oppressive systems and patriarchy and misogyny and all these things. And there's a lot of people like to use the term woke, but people are waking up. And I don't see that as a bad thing. This is like the 100 soldiers and robots walking down one. And then like all of a sudden some life hits somebody and they're like, whoa, like, why am I doing this? And so to stop there, whether it be parenting or life or whatever, and say, this isn't working for me. Like, and then as I talk to other people, I'm like, is this working for you? And they're like, no. And I'm like, so why are we all pretending we're not miserable? Like,
why are we all pretending we're not miserable?
Right.
That's fantastic. Okay, sorry.
No, that's good. And pretending that we're alone in this, we feel alone when we think the system's working for everybody else and it's not for us. And that is isolating and we don't feel like we belong that way. And it's a lot of pressure. And then, so for me, like my foundational youth was very traumatic and abusive household. And so when I was growing up, I didn't know how to express emotions. I wasn't allowed to. My father would allow either happiness or you were crying. And it was because he made you cry. And there was no in between. It was a very extreme. And usually the happiness wasn't always real either. It was a mask. Now, as an adult diagnosed as ADHD, you found out that I masked all the time. And I think every person does. We put on these masks and we go through life. But when I got to be an adult, I was like, I actually feel like I'm a very feely person, like down to my center of my core. I feel, I operate through feelings, and yet I don't even know how to express them, how to feel them. And when I do, they are extreme. And then when I had my child, I was like, even when my husband and I were dating, I was a loose cannon because he was actually my first relationship that wasn't a toxic cycle. And so he got a brunt of me that was like unleashing all the toxicity onto him. Because I was used to this dynamic of a relationship where it was two toxic people and feeding off of each other and having to defend yourself and all those things. Because I learned that through my family foundations, right? And then I decided to wake up, met him, and the poor man, I put him through hell. And then I was like, this is not working. This is horrible. And so when we broke up, we got back together. And I thank him for all of the patience that he's ever provided to me and that scope of like seeing past all the hurt and all the toxicity that I was portraying to try and keep myself protected. So I was already working on how to unleash all that and how to feel feelings and how to deal with anger. Dealing with anger was a huge one because nobody ever teaches us how to do that. And especially as women, especially as cis females.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. And yet we're always angry. I like the She-Hulk episode, if you haven't seen it yet, where like Hulk is explaining to She-Hulk, like, why are you so controlled? How can you control Hulk? And she's like, I'm angry every day. I'm a woman. And so like, I think like that was all boiled up. And then when I had my son, I was like, listen, I don't want you to be another toxic male. Like I know what that did to me being around toxic males. And I wanted my husband to, as wonderful as he was, there was still systems he had to break down and acknowledge. And so through having our son, we were both able to come to this place where it was like, this is how we feel emotions, teaching him, but at the same time, reparenting ourselves. And that is such a beautiful gift. It's hard. There's not one day is this not hard to reparent ourselves in a way that we didn't know. We weren't taught these things. And to like, thank goodness there's this like social media and there's Google and there's so many more platforms that are trying to teach people that are looking for this information. But like everybody can give you the tools, but they can't tell you how to feel it. And so It's such a blessing to give our children these chances to be full humans and to acknowledge that they are humans, even full humans at the young ages that they are. They are going to have meltdowns. They are going to be overstimulated. Like this is a big world. It's a big world for me. How can it not be big for them? And to allow them to have a healthy grip on expressing their emotions and sometimes in their safe place, getting it out and having that meltdown and just being there to support them, right? Like, that's amazing. And do I want to jump off the cliff sometimes? Heck yeah. Lisa, you're not alone. Like there's so many days. Yesterday, I was like, I am literally dragging you to school, right? Like we got to do this thing. And this is what the thing is. But like, we don't want to harden them from their home to their being outside. Home is supposed to be your safety net. And it's supposed to be about the people that care about you the most. And I think we were taught growing up, and I think I can probably speak for you too, but tell me if I'm wrong, but like home became this really hard in place as well, where you also had to protect yourself. So how can you be your authentic self if you weren't even allowed to be your authentic self at home? We have parents that were baby boomers and parents that were still in the industrial age and still in this very also frustrating time where their parents abandoned them. They didn't have parents teaching them. And so they did their best in teaching and trying to connect with us. But I think this is magical generation of people my age, your age, and younger, like they want to be connected to their children. They want to be connected to themselves. They want to be connected to their community. And we're giving so much more room for that emotional place, right? Rather than kids are meant to be seen, not heard. And now we're like, no, we want to hear you. Tell me your stories. Tell me what you're feeling. Tell me all these things, because we know what it was like to be silenced.
Yeah. On some days we want to hear you.
Yeah.
At 8 o'clock on a Thursday, we just, please, dear God, please go to bed. Yes. But
yes.
Yes. Yeah. And you know what, Shannon, it was interesting because you were talking about how we now have internet and access and things like that, which is great. And also, I think just the social stigma. I mean, this is a completely new era with having this conversation. This conversation would have been impossible. I mean, half the language we're using wasn't even around 40 years ago, right? Gosh. Like there wasn't even the vocabulary to begin to have these conversations.
And I think that's also why we need to, sorry, I interrupted you.
I had no idea where I was going anyway, so you're fine.
I think that's why we have to give ourselves a break too. I have so many friends that like that pressure to be perfect and to do everything perfect suddenly because we have all this information is also in different pressure than being the Stepford wife or the Stepford mom of like the robot. Everything's perfect. I'm on. My doctor has given me meth and coke to do everything perfect and get it all done in the 8 hours that everybody's gone to work. But everything's perfect. You know, I vacuum in my makeup to now being like, I am always a perfect parent. I never lose my shit. Like I never like, it's always an even kill. Like at 8 o'clock on Thursday, I'm not ready to lose it. Like, the fact is that we are still the first generation that's really trying this, if they're even trying, because if we know that there's many people in our communities that aren't even trying to break these cycles. So like, we also have to have that compassion and love for ourselves to be like, you're not going to get it perfect every day and you're going to make mistakes and it's okay. And that's what therapy is for, is our children are still going to have therapy and we're not going to do it right. But we're going to do the best that we can with the knowledge that we have. And they're going to have even more knowledge accessible to them. And they're going to have all of these things that we didn't have. And like, that's amazing. That's cycle breaking.
Can we talk about loving yourself as you are?
Yeah.
Because I think this is related, if you're following me, because one thing I'm doing with my work, and I will, like, I am right now in therapy to help break these cycles. Did I just invent circuit breaker, or is it really a thing?
No, I don't know if I say circuit or cycle. Okay. I have no idea what I say. I don't know what I said the day that they were talking, okay. You know.
I'm like, did I mishear you? And then I've created a whole new word that no one else knows about. And they're like, what is she talking? I like circuits, like the electricity.
Oh, yeah.
And then I see somebody pulling a lever and it's like, and you're just stopping the circuit of electricity. You're like, no more. But it is not that easy. So I have been doing a lot of work. And one thing that when I have this in therapy, but it makes me really angry because I know it's right, but it always goes back to kind of my own self-image. And it's really, really, really hard to allow your 6-year-old or 7-year-old or 8-year-old to have a meltdown when you're not comfortable with your own emotions. Or it's really, really hard to have positive body image in your house, if you're just daily berating yourself with your internal dialogue as to how you look. So 100%. I think, yeah, it's so important. In fact, it's essential to really love yourself, be comfortable with yourself, be satisfied with who you are. And that to this day, Shannon, continues to be a struggle, as I think you can imagine. But yeah, talk to us a bit of why it's so important and so difficult to love ourselves just as we are. And before you answer that, mm-hmm. I'm going to say, if you're listening and you have not followed Shannon on Instagram or Facebook, you have a Facebook page as well. I'll include all the links. Check it out because
TikTok too.
Oh, you are on TikTok.
I am like
the last frontier holding out. I know I should be on there, but I will post all of that in the show notes, but follow it. And I have to say, so I am a 44-year-old grown-ass woman, and it is only recently because of you and Celeste Barber. Like, that's it. That I've been able to see pictures of like average, normal, unphotoshopped, non-starved women. And so like, it's only recently within the past few years, I can like be changing and look in the full length mirror and go, oh yeah, normal.
Yeah.
And move on with my day. Like, how effed up is that? That,
yeah.
Cause I was thinking about it. I said, when have I seen, when else besides your Instagram feed and Celeste Barber, when do you see women's body unphotoshopped, unedited, just as they are? Like, I don't want to say normal women, cause I wouldn't consider normal a compliment.
Real. But
every day.
Real.
Yeah.
Every and, day. And real is everybody too. I mean, that's not the right word either, but your average woman, your person.
But exceptional. Average, but exceptional.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? I feel like a relatable. Let's use relatable.
Yeah, relatable. That's
okay.
A good word.
I feel like, wow, that's a woman who has had children and who takes care of herself and who loves herself. And so thank you, first of all, for that. And then secondly, what drove you? Like, what drove you to post pictures of you in a bathtub on Instagram? Like, how can you take us on that journey a bit?
I am so honored when I can show diverse people to the world. I think we all need to see more of that. So, I mean, going back to when I was explaining like my journey and my postpartum and new roles and all of those things, that's what, and hearing moms talk about bad about themselves in front of their children who are sponges and personalize everything, even if it's not about them. And so that's what started this all, that I knew I had to do better and I knew I had to do more. That brought me to boudoir. And I had a boudoir experience before I was married and I did it for him and I didn't really do it for me. And I loved it. It was a great experience. When I looked at the images from the photographer, it was the first time that I saw myself as beautiful. And I was alone at work at the front desk of my work at that time. I got an email. I was like, come check, gotta go check out these photos. And then I sat there stunned and I didn't know what to do. I was actually like frozen. I was like, I'm beautiful. And I didn't know how to process that. I was all alone. And so I went back to my other coworker and I was like, can I show you these photos? This is TMI, but I'm going to show you these photos. I did a bridal boudoir shoot. I need somebody to talk me through that I'm beautiful. And she was like, did you not know that before? And I was like, no. And so my coworker and I looked at these phones. She's like, this is how I see you. I can't believe you don't see yourself this way. And they weren't risque photos. They were pretty typical boudoir bridal shoots, but I was left alone in that feeling. So when I did my first boudoir shoot, I worked with a couple of models and instantly I was like crawling on the furniture in the hotel room, which having a photo shoot with me is very typical. And I literally was walking on the dressers and moving things around in this hotel room. And I was lit on fire. I had never been so alive and in the moment. I didn't want to go home. I just like, can we do this for 4 more hours? Like, I was just lit up from the inside out. And right then, I had already been educating myself. I think it's really important for photographers to not just jump into something like boudoir, baby photography, anything without educating yourself, because it's something dire. And then I was like, hey, I got that base information. I got the feeling this is the thing. And now I need to educate myself even more. And there's, when I started, it was just bridal boudoir. It was very specific, standard boudoir. And body positivity movement was not a thing. Nobody spoke about body image. So having to go through and educate myself on the psychology of body image, and which is also attached to feminism and attached to oppressive systems. And then seeing how this is all linked, and obviously anybody listening to us today, ADHD, I connect things like in a big cobweb map. And I'm like, oh, that's linked to that. And that's that. And I saw this big picture. And then I decided, okay, so I can do really fun and fluffy boudoir, but like, this is really meaningful to me. And if I'm going to beat myself up about this body, I need it to change. I need to walk the walk. 7 years ago, I took photos of myself and they were dark. They were really dark. And you could just barely see myself in those shadows. It took me 2 weeks to edit the one image because I looked at it and I couldn't look at it anymore. And I looked at it and then I couldn't look at it anymore. And this is after a child. This is after like all these like major body image things came up. And then I just said one day, fuck it. Sorry, can I swear?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. I was like, screw it.
Yeah.
And I edited it and I had a VIP group at the time and I put it out and I was so used to everybody else in the group being like complimented and stuff, and I got flooded. And so even the validation of other women and other people saying you're beautiful and taking that in, as there's not a second agenda, there's not any of that, because we're taught that as well. But like literally they meant these compliments. This is what they saw, and taking that in. And I was like, ooh, this is powerful. And then I found other photographers, my mentor, Terry Hofford. I really was just learning. I wanted to learn all about boudoir and in her eyes and how she was posing people that looked like me, because people that looked like me as a plus size fat bodied person were not seen at that time. And they were just your standard, very thin, straight sized women. So I wanted to learn from another expert how to do that properly and how to honor bodies that look like mine. Recently in the studio, I did the bathtub shoot and putting myself out there naked. And if I ever have a corporate job, I'm going to have to explain this, but
it's just more motivation to really succeed as a photographer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. My naked body is all over the internet.
Yeah.
I can't expect you, Lisa, or whoever's listening to us to come into the studio, feel safe if they know that I can't do this myself. And put myself in front of other photographers, because that's a whole other vulnerability, putting myself in front of other photographers that will honor or will do what they see. Because it's important to see ourselves through other people's eyes. So I must do the do instead of talking the talk, right? Like I must do both. And so what I say, when I say to people, they're like, oh, I can't do that. I can't invest in that. I can't. I'm so glad that you, as a fat bodied woman, like congratulations on putting yourself out there, but I can't do it. And when I say, yes, you can, because I can, like, I don't mean that in a flippant, like, well, I can do it. You can. I've gone through the shit. I've gone through like the muckiest of muck of hating myself to where I'm at now. And people think, I think they assume that I've always just been this confident and that I've always just loved myself. And the truth is, like, that is not the case. You have to give yourself permission to do these things. But I am here to support you through that. You wanted to know what I, on the process of like doing a self-portrait, what I experienced, what that looks like for me?
Yeah, I'm just thinking internally, if I was having to take my own pictures, I'd be like, oh, fuck.
I mean, there's sometimes that's definitely it.
Am I doing this? Okay. Yeah, smile.
Yeah, hit the button, now run, and like 100%. For me, it's really funny because not very often do I take my photo when I'm feeling great. And I most often do it when I feel like shit. And I think there's power in that. Not to say that I can't take my photo when I feel amazing, because that's important too. It's important to celebrate. But for me, a lot of my work is reminding myself why I do what I do. And so when I feel like shit, and feeling like shit is not just body-wise, by the way, like our body image is very much tied to the mental place that we're at. And there is trauma and there's all these things involved, which we can get into, but really actually makes up body image. But when I feel like shit, and I don't plan it. A lot of people think you have to plan your boudoir shoot 3 months in advance and all these things. Like I literally will like be like, you know, I'm sitting here stewing. I can't concentrate on what I'm doing. I just feel like shit. So I'm just going to go set up that camera and I'm going to pull something from the client closet or whatever. And like, let's do it. And I usually in the beginning feel like shit. I look at the back of the camera and I'm like, okay, like, no, like, you got to feel this more, Shannon, like get into it. Like you can do better. And then like let yourself feel. I always say, tell myself, like, let myself feel. And then by the time I'm done, just like my clients, like, I'm like, oh, okay. Now I feel it. Like this is like, bam, that's that like light bulb moment. And then I'm like, hey, I'm really proud of this now. Like I, even in a, like an hour, 2 hour self-portrait session with myself, I will go through the same journey that I put every client through and the mental journey that my clients go through. And now I like, when I do my photos, before I said it took me 2 weeks to edit, like I will literally do it in a half hour now. I don't, on my particular images, I do not edit any of my skin. I do not edit anything out. Because I think that's also really important. If clients want their skin smooth or something like that, I will honor that. But again, walking the walk, talk the talk, right? So I don't edit myself at all. What you see is what you get. And HDR camera lens quality. And I feel like if you can give me compassion and you can connect with me and see that my beautiful fat bodied self with cellulite and wrinkles and ingrown hairs and whatever it might be, that if you can see that I'm beautiful, then you can see that you're beautiful.
There's so many points I want to go back to. I loved what you said that you took your picture when you're feeling like shit. And it reminded me of when I was painting. That sounds really sad. When I was painting, oh God, okay. When I was painting, I will go back to it one day. I did portraits. I did women's portraits.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, and I did a lot of self-portraits, but guess what, Shannon? I only did self-portraits when I felt like shit. And I remember it was my first year teaching. I was 23 years old. And I think it was winter break. It was not especially a break or particularly good. And I did a self-portrait in oil paintings and I brought it in to show my grade eight students. And it was just a close-up of the face. And one grade eight student looked at me in all of his wisdom and insight and said, "Miss Bush, it looks like somebody beat you with a baseball bat." And I was like, that's it. That's it. I could title it "Beaten with a Metaphorical Baseball Bat." And there's something that is, I almost think it goes back to everything we've talked about. Like, how many times have we told to smile, or, you know, "Oh, you're so pretty when you smile," or, "Oh." And so I think it's kind of our big, maybe subconscious, this is me breaking the circuit or cycle, depending on what we're talking about. One other point, and I've been thinking about it a lot during this whole conversation, because art can so easily be marginalized and pushed to the fringes. And I think one thing I'm seeing in this conversation with you that absolutely rings home to me is that art is not optional. Art is our sanity.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh, yes. I mean, look at the beginning of the pandemic, 2020. It's March. It's April. What did everybody do? As we're stuck at home, having to do shadow work, self work, having to interflect, have to be with our thoughts, like literally isolated, having all the pressures on the world. What did every single person turn to? Art. They were either watching Netflix. They were either doing paint by numbers. Diamonds. They were crafting, they were knitting, they were crocheting, they were doing these.
They were starting a novel that they're still working on in 2022.
Yeah. Yes. Like, everybody got back in touch with that deep sense. Like, that is soul work. I believe art is an extension of our souls. This is really weird, but in North America, we don't appreciate art. Like, we look at museums overseas and we look at the way that art is a part of society. It's appreciated. Where in North America, we don't do that. We say, shut off that part of yourself and do the robot work that we've asked you to do for capitalism, please. There is a scary part to allowing people to feel and allowing people to express themselves in ways that is creative. And if we look at a lot of innovative structures and ideas and all of those things, where do they come from? Somebody had to be creative enough to figure that out. They had to break away from that mold to say, look at, I have this idea. I have this new way of thinking. I have this new thought, whether it be art or whether it be engineering or whatever it is, there's still an artistic component to that, that ingenuity, that feeling. Art is essential. It's the literal human connection to your soul. It is how we feel. And if we don't allow ourselves to feel, there's no life.
Yes. And it goes to dangerous places. I talked yesterday with Anna Murphy, and we talked a lot about what's happening with kind of the hate that's coming up in certain political groups towards removal of rights. And, you know, I think that when... Now, this is a big leap. And again, to the linear thinkers, if you're still with us, like, I'm highly impressed, but you know what I mean? But I think when you shut a part of yourself off, like, that little part dies inside. And I think I've worked with kids long enough. I've taught elementary school art. I have two kids of my own. Kids are innately creative. And so, and in fact, I heard the question, how can we raise kids without killing their curiosity? And that is hard. I mean, I struggle with that.
I used to ask my father all the time, why? Why are you asking me to do that? Why do we do it that way? Why do we do this? And he'd say, because I said so. And like gut, right? Like literally you just like went, oh yeah, because I said so. There was no questioning. It was this authoritarian parenting and the way the world works. Cause I don't even think our parents knew why we do what we did. And it killed my curiosity. It killed it. And I became not curious. And I said to my mentor, Terry, I said one day, you keep telling me to be curious and I don't know how to do that. And she said, you weren't allowed to be curious when you were young, were you? And she knows my family history. So she said, what did your dad say to you? And I just like, I shed tears. And I said, he said, because I told you so. And she said, so when your son says, I want to go play, I want to go do that, I want to go do that, ask him why. Just start off with their why. Why do you want to do that? What makes you love that? And just ask questions. And so I don't think we ask ourselves enough questions. We don't ask our kids those questions because I told you so is so authoritarian. And why would we want to ever kill the explorer and the investigator and the creative in our kids? Because they're going to come up with brilliant, amazing, incredible ideas.
They have to at this point.
Yeah.
Paul Torrance wrote, I think in like the 1958, 1962, he did an article around then, and he was looking at the U.S. relationship with Russia. And he said, the only way we can get ourselves out of this is creativity.
Yes.
And I'm there now. Look at, you know, climate change and all of that. The only way we can get ourselves out of this is creativity. We're not going to be able, like, we have to get really creative. And
we have to.
Going back to the importance of art, I want to talk for a minute about art and gender diversity, because yes. I have struggled to even begin to understand why gender diversity is not just like the sky's blue or, yeah. You know what I mean? We're breathing oxygen. Why is this? Why are we even having discussions as to if this exists or if this, like, why? And I grew up in a very traditional mom, dad home. You know, I myself am cisgendered, straight. So I'm like, where is this coming from? Like, where is this coming from? Just this kind of like innate knowing that sure, gender diversity and gender being a spectrum just is commonsensical. And it went back to my studio art classes. And I thought about the life model. So we did life drawing. So you'd have like a nude individual in the middle of the room. We also did still lifes, similar idea. You would have whatever set up in the middle of the room and you'd have 20 to 28 students with easels all around drawing the same person or the same thing, the same person, the same thing. And you would have 28 variations of it. It would be odd. It would be uncomfortable. It would be like science fiction. If I did my sketch of the model and then before we braked, we would always walk around and we would talk to each other about their work and we would learn from each other because they were all different. Shannon, yeah. Do you see where this is going?
Yes.
And it was never like, well, your different is less superior to my different and you're different, you know, well, that's a threat to me as an individual. And you know, it was always like, oh, and it was always met with curiosity, going back to curiosity, inquisitiveness. And I'm not going to say acceptance because I'm tired of we need to accept. It was met with celebration. Like, oh my gosh, I never looked at it this way. Or, oh my gosh, your perspective, how your lines, tell me about these lines. And so when I think of things like gender or like religion, I cannot understand, like it goes, and I attribute that to art. So I think that when we take art out of the curriculum, when we take out art out of the core classes in the school, when we take art out of kids' lives, like I don't think people quite get the ramifications. That was
100%. I agree with you. I think that like any art, any creative person, we live in the gray zone. And as ADHD people, we live in the gray zone. There is no black and white. There's always like, as an ADHD person, I want to know your story. I want to know what makes you you. I want to know why you see things that way. I want, you know, like we're investigative people. And for me, the world isn't 100% not black and white. There's always an experience or a trauma or something that has made you believe what you do and make you do the things that you do. And when I think that's, again, stepping out and into our authentic selves, taking away these masks and experiencing life and waking up, like, you know, is what feels like a threat to people that are very black and white systematic thinkers and who attach themselves to other people's beliefs. You were saying like having 20 people in a room and how every single person's art was different. That also happens when you're doing a photography course and you're doing like a shootout with other photographers, is that everybody sees it, everything differently. We could literally be both standing in the exact same spot for the exact same amount of time and images will come out differently. And I think that's a beauty of knowing that the experiences that you've had, Lisa, and what's made you, Lisa, to this day is not my experiences and is not somebody else's experiences. And this is where we're addressing privilege and we're addressing the different journeys and stories and narratives that we've been told through our lives really do make up how we view the world. And if we don't question that, if we don't appreciate other people's perspectives, then we can't see that other people see life differently.
Wow, that was a lot. I mean, we started out with a conversation on art and parenting and ended up with global worldviews and ending war. I mean, we ended at world peace. So I loved it. I hope you did too. Next episode, Shannon and I discuss our perspectives of living with ADHD. We are both very open and discuss things we haven't shared publicly because we think it's important to talk about its impact on our lives, our parenting, and our work. So stay tuned. I invite you to share this work, text an episode to a friend, rate it, leave a review, share it with others on your social media site, help to amplify the stories told. Remember to tag Stories Within Us when you post at Stories Within Us on Twitter and at Stories Within Us Podcast on Instagram. The design for Stories Within Us was created by Dr. Milena Rejikowska and Chris Shattuck of Two Hot Soup Consulting. Post-production and sound editing is done by East Coast Studios. Thank you once again for listening. Here's to creating change within us and change around us, one story at a time.